From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour, President's Weekend, the final day of President's Weekend. I remember when we got Lincoln's birthday on the actual birthday, the 12th of February, and then we got Washington's birthday on the actual birthday, which was February the 22nd. And we thought, well, and February's already a short month. Boy, we loved that in school. Now it's President's Day. We honor all presidents. What are we, 45 now? Something like that. So anyway, I'm glad you have a holiday and glad that you're listening to us on this beautiful day the Lord has made. And we're pleased to welcome Jane Lee from God's Heart and Hands Ministry.
Good morning. It's great to be here.
It is great to be here. You know, Jane, the terrible tragedy and in Florida, the shooting at high school. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we hear this, you know, and I'm not going to wade into the weeds of gun control and all of what we can do and what we can't do. People have different opinions for good reasons on both sides, and sometimes not always good reasons, but the tragedy, the human tragedy, and the things that we hear from, I mean, some people say, well, our thoughts and prayers, we hear that a lot, and mm-hmm. it's become almost sort of a cliche, our thoughts and prayers go out. And some people kind of mock it and say, oh, save your thoughts and prayers, we need to do this, or we need to do that, you know, and you never want to denigrate prayer. Prayer is the most... It's the most powerful thing we have. Mm-hmm. It's also sometimes the only thing we have. Mm-hmm. And this strikes me as one of those situations where it is the only thing we have. We're in despair. And I mean, here we are 3,000 miles away and watching the grief, mm-hmm. The people who lost a child, the people who still have a child in the hospital, who may make it, may not make it, or survive, and then all the kids that were there and how they are that survived and, mm-hmm. and how they made it through, and the effect on their lives, will it change the course of their lives, on and on and on, and it is one of the starkest pictures I ever saw, of all of that. You see these photos, you know, mm-hmm. of different people outside consoling each other, and there was one of a woman completely aggrieved, whether or not she had lost a child or mm-hmm. not, I don't know, and there were ashes on her forehead.
Yes.
And it was, and I thought, oh my gosh, this is Ash Wednesday, this is Valentine's Day, this is,
right.
you know, and we were kind of joking about that in the previous week, that these things were happening on this, you know, joking in a really happy sort of
right.
way.
And 40 Days for Life started on the same day.
40 Days for Life starts on the same day. And to see the ashes on this woman's forehead and her tears coming down her cheeks, and she's hugging somebody else and consoling them, and I thought, we need God, we need Jesus mm-hmm. Christ, we need prayer, and but it's, we're almost hesitant to say that. You know, because we don't want to offend somebody. We
right.
don't want to hear somebody who's grieving and say, well, I'll pray for you.
Right.
And usually you will hear, thank you. But sometimes mm-hmm. you'll kind of like see a roll of the eyes and, yeah, well, that might work for you. But
right, right. And as somebody said to me, don't waste your prayer on me.
Whoa. You hear that.
You know.
Buzzwords. And I guess I'll give people a lot of slack who are in that situation,
mm-hmm.
you know, but it doesn't mean we shouldn't stop praying.
No,
praying
I think
for
then
everybody.
Then that becomes the enemy is won if we do that. What also I've taken that to, because it is becoming a cliche, and I think it's also becoming a cliche because we're having to say it so much.
Yeah.
And for the eye rolling is we don't know what happens in the moment, but we do know when we call on God, he does hear, and it says so time and time again in the Bible. But I found that elaborating more. I'm going to pray that Jesus, you feel Jesus's presence so close to you, and that the Blessed Mother, you feel as a mother the ache she has for you right now. And just however it comes to me to like make it more tangible for them, so it's something they can grab onto. Because prayer is something that it's hard to grab onto, so to speak.
You know,
it's like the check is in the mail kind of thing.
Exactly.
But if we can make it tangible and say, I can't even imagine how hurting you are, so I'm going to pray so I can have wisdom to know what I can do for you, for this, to be there for you, that then people have something to hold on to. Now it's like saying, well, let me know if I can do anything. People can't hold on to that. But if we say, can I bring a meal?
Yeah.
Can I do errands for you? Then, yes, no, this is what I need. I'm going to pray that the Lord be so close to you that he did not want this to happen.
Right.
And your child is in his arms, and that you know that, and you feel any kind of consolation that he's able to get to you. And so that gives them, I think, a piece of just something to hold on to that's tangible, because what's very tangible to them right now is just terror and grief.
Yeah. I think overwhelming grief, because you look at the pictures of the kid who was arraigned, and it doesn't seem to be, I mean, he's already confessed. There doesn't seem to be, I know we're supposed to use the words alleged and
right.
things, but it doesn't seem to be much doubt in anybody's mind that he's the one who did it. And you see him in court, and he doesn't look like somebody you'd be afraid of walking down the street.
Right.
You know, and you think how in 19 years did his life, you know, his mom and dad had both died. His mom very recently. There's never an excuse. There's never a,
no,
you know,
but we do
never
strive
a justification.
To understand. Right.
And, the weapons and the gun control and all that is a separate discussion. And I know our faith leaders, our bishops, our cardinals, the Pope, they all are expressing, mm-hmm. The heartache of this and their profound prayers, etc. But you know, on Thursday morning, the day after, my 15-year-old, who's a sophomore in high school, had a long planned field trip.
Mm-hmm.
They were going all the way to Tulare, which is almost to Bakersfield, and they were leaving at. We had to have her at the high school at 4:45. A.M., which means...
That's a quarter to five. It's a little
quarter
easier
to five
think
in
of,
it's the
a little,
morning.
It's a little easier to think of as a quarter to five than 4:45.
Yeah, that's
45.
Right. But then you think about...
In the middle of the night, it feels
getting
like...
Getting a teenager out of bed. First off, getting a teenager to bed the
right.
night before.
Yes.
Getting the teenager out of bed, dressed.
Mm-hmm.
Dressed, but not stressed.
Right.
Breakfast.
Right.
Snacks packed. All these things. It was a FFA, Future
uh-huh.
Farmers America field trip down to the World Ag Expo, and mm-hmm. it was a big deal in the town of Tulare. And she's so excited about it. And you know, I was the one who drove her to school,
mm-hmm.
and then they're going to take vans. And so we pull up at the school, and I walk her into the classroom, and I look around, and there's all these. Kids, some of the boys kind of talking to each other, goofing off, you know, and just everybody being a teenager, but everybody really looking forward to this big field trip. And they weren't even going to get back till 9 o'clock
mm-hmm.
that night, because about 4 hours down, and then all day at the expo,
mm-hmm.
and then at 4 or 5 o'clock, come back another 4 hours. And I looked around the room, and I said, it's kind of a small group, you know, and counted, and there were 17.
Oh.
It was then it just hit me. I saw 17 teenagers with their whole lives in front
wow.
of them. And I mean, it was one of those things that bypasses the brain. The tears just welled up in my eyes in a way they hadn't the day before, because it was just such shock, you
right.
know, and you're watching it, you know, something's happened and maybe somebody's injured, maybe somebody's
right.
not. And then all of a sudden here comes the news, and there were 17 kids in that room. And it just...
It became very real.
It became very, very, very real. And I thought, how can we reach out to these people? I mean, we're not going to probably write them letters. We're not going to do anything here. We there are GoFundMe and things
mm-hmm.
like that for those who need help. And, you know, they talk about grieving and healing. And I don't know how you... grieve and heal, you know, and you have to turn to the Lord. Archbishop Wenske of Miami, and it's in his diocese, urged Floridians to rise above their understandable outrage, come together as a community to support one another.
Mm-hmm. So he acknowledged what they were feeling, and he also gave them something, where to go, what to do, some place to put their feet. Yes, this is going on, and this is we need to step forward. And I'm really caught by the scripture in Matthew 11:29. The most famous is, "Take my yoke upon you, for my mm-hmm. burden is lighter," and so on. But just before that, in 11:29, it says, "Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am meek and humble of heart, and you will find rest for yourselves." And besides the obvious, you will find rest, that he will comfort us. And going back to the prayer we were talking about, that I hope the Lord, you can feel his comfort, so you can rest from this horror. But the part that really struck me is, "Take my yoke upon you and learn from me." So when we do that, he will teach us, he will guide us, because everything you're saying and that's going on, something. And it's showing up in the media a little bit, and people are assessing and already trying to figure it out. And like you were mentioning, his parents died and so on. We do that. Okay, what happened? How do we not have this train wreck?
Everybody wants a motive, you know, as if there's
what can we do to
some kind of a – when we think of motive, we think of a justification. Why did you do this? You know, mm-hmm. like the motive in a bank robbery is, I want money. You know,
right.
The motive – when you kill somebody is, well, I was angry with them because for some reason. It doesn't justify it,
mm-hmm.
but it gives you some parameters, some box to put it in or something.
Yeah.
Whereas
with
these random things like this, it's you're not going to get a motive that is understandable or satisfying or calming.
And we've been doing that since the beginning, since the most famous ones started that we know that have, and they're picking up frequency, sadly, is that we have to, we're trying to understand, like you mentioned the conversation about gun control, what can we do? How do we protect our children? How do the 17 children staying in that classroom, how do we protect them? We don't know. And it's trying to protect against something that we can't even quantify, to identify who is it, whatever it would be. And we did it after 9/11 too. Mm-hmm. And this is what we do. It's a natural thing. How do we protect? Oh, I can lock the door next time so the toddler doesn't run out. It's that we're trying to like make it. How do we keep ourselves safe? And you know, God's heart and hands, the work the Lord has given me to do is look at the world through the lens of motherhood. So this isn't the answer, but it's a piece mm-hmm. I would offer, in that we have something we can do. We have a place to put our feet, to put our eyes, and that is what's right in front of us. That is how, not only just how our kids are coping and everything else, but beyond that, it's in our community, meaning our community of our kids' classrooms, our church, our neighborhood, our families, is to look and to pray for wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
And so there isn't a to-do list that we can do, but plenty of people are going to have that conversation. But how can God use me? I am here. There are kids in my neighborhood. What am I noticing? And at the same time, the only way to do that is to put down this mantle of, I'm too busy. I'm too busy to see, to understand. We see it with our eyes, but we're not comprehending with our heart, because we've got this agenda, we've got this to-do list, the kids have to be all these places, and our lives are scheduled to where there really isn't much time to think. And the biggest piece is, there isn't any, really, I would say, much opportunity for the Holy Spirit to bring something across our path. Having been in Raid when the kids were growing up, at the times I sat outside to be outside when they were there, you know, sitting there reading a magazine so they could be out in the street and keeping an eye on, because they weren't quite old enough to do it on their own. Kids would come by, and there were some kids that everybody in the neighborhood knew were getting to be trouble, and they were rolling down the hill on our street on skateboards that had refrigerator boxes on them. They'd cut a little hole in, and they had covered themselves up, and they were sailing down mm-hmm. this street. Well, that was just an accident waiting to happen, because people came whipping around the corner and they couldn't see cars. They didn't have any peripheral vision in this very big box. And so people were taking that attitude of, oh, they're trouble. Oh, look at this. It's going to da-da-da-da. Well, I just happened to be out there one day when they kind of crashed and burned right in front of my house. So I stepped forward into the moment to talk to them and to make that connection, just to talk to them and see where they were at. And to put eyes on them mm-hmm. and to assess the situation. Were they headed for trouble? It looked that way two-dimensionally, but when I got to see them and got to talk to them, no, they weren't. But I was willing to be there and to talk to them and to be that place. And that's what I would offer, that moms, we need to come back to the table, and society needs to let us. Motherhood is a job. It has a place. And not only do we need to come back to the table, but lean in. I have something to say as a mother. There's many other pieces you all are very important that you're going to contribute, but I have a piece because this is the piece God gave me. And while it isn't as big or influential or has a letterhead and a paycheck with it, I have a presence. I have eyes. God has wired me to do this and to see this. And He'll bring children in front of me that are lost mm-hmm. in one way or another, and making that connection. So I would offer that in this situation, the mothers, we have an ability to say, okay, what do people need in front of me? Not just the people in the crisis, but people on the outskirts of the crisis, the other children. What do people need? And who has something to offer? Mm-hmm. Because different people have different things to offer. So it's basically allowing God to work through us. And that's the huge piece. And the motherhood has been clouded by so many other expectations, but we are, like many other roles in society, mothers have a role of a presence that the people debating gun control, they have a presence that I won't be in, but they won't be in my presence mm-hmm. to talk about kids that are not the kids that are being bullied. Other people are talking about that. Not the kids that are doing the bullying, but the other kids. What the eyes that God has given to me is I see the kids that are watching all this going on in the high schools, because I've been substituting in the high schools and elementary schools, middle schools, and so on, is the most profound piece we need to pay attention to. Is everybody talks about the bully and the victim. It's what the other kids are seeing, because that's where they're watching the adults around them.
Yeah.
And they've actually verbalized to me, why are you the only one doing something? Why is nobody doing something? And that's where that despair and lack of empathy comes from, because they're so troubled they can't put the right place to figure out this.
Yeah.
And that's the piece I believe mothers have in this. And we have to play, it's important that we do piece by piece, and not to look at our contribution as being too small, because only in God's eyes, just that one mom, that one person, and that one kid in the neighborhood, that's what we're doing. That's what we're seeing. Not the, I can't fix that. I'm so affected by what happened in Florida, but I can watch and I can, okay, Lord, use me as an instrument. I'm 3,000 miles away. I'm here. I'm open. What do you want me to do? And that's huge and that's powerful. And it also helps us not feel helpless, I think.
Yeah. It's, you know, one of the most troubling things, the one that just stuck with me and bothered me, I saw one woman being interviewed before anybody really knew. They knew there'd been a shooting, but they, you know, the whole thing was blocked off and the parents were gathering, and they interviewed one woman mm-hmm. who said, I just hope he's all right. I usually say I love you when I drop him off.
Oh my gosh.
Today I didn't. You know, and it seems minor, but it, you know, and it reminds me of mornings can be pretty hectic.
Mm-hmm.
And they can be sometimes a bit short-tempered,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes
we've all been there. I
sometimes
understand.
Kids can be a little bit snippy, and then mom or dad gets a little bit snippy, and come on, you're going to be late again, you know. Mm-hmm. And you just feel like, can't we solve this? Can't we just all get up 20 minutes earlier?
Yeah,
and just sit for 10 minutes and ask the Lord to help us? And,
right.
You know, but it becomes, it's time to get up.
Yeah.
It's 7:20, you know, and whether you're riding your bike or you're walking or mom or dad's going to give you a ride, you know, we need to leave by this time.
Right.
And as it closes in on them, and you know, some of our kids they cope much better. Some of them, they're just chronically the last one. Did you brush your teeth? No. Well, I don't have time to brush my teeth. Well, I'm just putting my shoes on. Well, you know, I'm sorry you're just putting your shoes on, but you should have done it half an hour. You know, those conversations. And I'm very big on doing exactly what that woman regretted not saying. You know, mm-hmm. it was like, when we drop you guys off or say goodbye to you out the door because you're on your bike or you're walking, I want everything to be okay.
Right.
I want you to know how much we love you and right. we're not mad at you and you're not mad at us. And not that it happens a lot, but it
right. It does. It stays
it
with
after,
you.
after all these years.
Evolution's still, really slow.
Yeah, we have not solved the early morning problem.
No.
You know, it's just there. And that's something that I think it's so important for a kid going off to school or getting up, whatever they're doing, mm-hmm. that they know there's a place of unconditional love for them to come
right.
back to.
And can I offer and speak into that for those parents that are suffering that right now? Because chances are, because of the effect of it, they're probably, statistically speaking, there is a parent that didn't say that and so on, is that possibly your child knows you love them bigger than you just saying it that morning.
Yeah, exactly.
It's been played out 10 million times
exactly.
over again.
Exactly.
It's from getting up in the middle of the night when they had a fever to for being there when the mistakes happened, the call from the school, when they really blew it, when you had to stand in front of the traffic court judge with them, when you had to help
right.
them navigate all the mistakes they made. They have a sense, and we do think, if I didn't say it that morning, well, they're not, that's how I left it. No, actually, they weren't even thinking about it. They take the bigger picture and that feeling of love and the biggest thing. And I want to offer that to any parent or anybody that's feeling that there is a bigger picture.
Yeah, and hopefully they know that the love is unconditional, and sometimes it has to be, it's popular to say, tough love. It has to be.
Well, even Jesus, appropriately
yeah.
so, would
yeah.
get angry, like, you know.
Yeah, I mean, we can't be so concerned that you think we love you that we're not going to correct you.
Right.
And occasionally, maybe it seems harsh, but not in a beating sort of way or anything, but just even like, okay, I'm sorry, you know, you're not going to go to
right
the,
or even the parents
not going to go to the movie today because you know mm-hmm. we talked to you about six times about cleaning your room.
That's
and
right.
We told you there was going to be consequences, and I'm sorry if you're going to be a little unhappy about not getting to go to the movie with your friends, but you had your chances and you
that's
were
right.
reminded four or five
that's
times.
Right.
You
that's
know?
Right. And I'm thinking about also the parents that had an argument with, I mean, a full blown argument, mm-hmm. as only with teenagers we know it can just hit. You know, the perfect storm hits, and the parent that's like, wow, that was the last interaction I had, was a screaming match, drop them off, and then here this catastrophe mm-hmm. happens, and that right now that child is in the arms of the Lord.
Yeah.
That argument, they know it's, now the context of that argument. They
exactly.
know, wow, my parent was arguing with me about the movies because they saw that they had to do the right thing, and that my parent, I love them more now because they had the courage to stand up to me and make me do what's right, because they were trying to prepare me and help me grow up to be all the things God wanted. So I would offer that those children have the bigger understanding because they're with the Lord and they know that, and they now have more understanding than they did as a teenager.
Yeah, and from a parent standpoint, you know, a lot of us will say, well, we all went through this, and this, you know, we had to put up with this and do that, mm-hmm. and we were all cocksure that as a kid that we knew all the right answers, and our parents were idiots,
right.
or,
yeah.
you know, and,
yeah.
And all that, mm-hmm. although they were maybe the most benign, they were just sort of embarrassing, you
right.
know, and as a parent, you don't want them feeling that way, you
right.
know, and, you know, well, there's a one ad where, Dad, would you drop me off?
Yeah,
or, you
block
know,
away.
A block away,
uh-huh.
and, you know, and that whole thing, but they, you know, unfortunately, even as adults, I mean, we make mistakes all the time. We make some big ones.
We do. And I think that's the best part of parenthood, is to own it. And especially, you know, when they get to be late teens, early 20s, they look back and go, you blew it, Mom.
And
wow.
I mean, you want
I did.
Your,
I'm
you
sorry.
You want your kids to think in somehow that you're Superman and you're a role model, super
right.
superwoman, and that you're, you know, you don't make mistakes, and because
mm-hmm.
you've been through all everything and you've figured it all out, and but you do, and I think the best thing you can do when you do is let your kids know that you're struggling. Well, that,
mm-hmm.
that was a mistake, you know. I should mm-hmm. should you know, and hopefully it's just an error in judgment. It's not a moral call, but sometimes even
mm-hmm.
then you did something that was just wrong.
Yeah, and that's the best modeling for them to be parents, because
yeah.
I. My parents were that. They tried to always maintain that. And if you like talked to them about something or brought something up that wasn't connecting, they would get angry and there was no room for it. So they couldn't own it and then rectify it, apologize, heal it. And then also if they had, they would have been providing an incredible role model to move forward. Yeah. So the role model they gave me is don't do that. So when my kids have done it, I did all that, held space for them, apologized, heard their feelings so they understood. And then are you ready to hear what was going on in the bigger picture that you didn't know?
Yeah.
Just to let you know so you understand the bigger picture moving forward, there is no justification. Yeah, I did. You're absolutely right. I am so sorry. And I realized it and I didn't do it again, or I tried to do better. And that's what you will take forward as being a parent, because then I think they will move forward into being a parent having compassion for themselves and other parents, because there is no perfect ideal. You know, I was a new mom I know, she's got an 18-month-old, and was talking about how she'd seen the mom walking into the coffee shop, hair done, makeup done, perfectly dressed, child with the little curls and the bows in their hair. And it just made her feel like inadequate. Let's just go with that. That just sums up everything on every level of being a mom, for being a mom to the child, for who she was as a human being. It just flattened her. And I said, let me tell you the truth behind that. She got lucky. The baby slept in and the right clothes were clean. That's all it was.
Yeah.
And then it's that perspective of having compassion for ourselves and being able to do that. And so mothers, and moving forward and interpreting and integrating this tragedy in that community, not just the ones that are affected by it, but those that are going to be support to them and helping the other children navigate it, the kids around it, the school, the administrators, let's have this conversation. Those are the ones that are going to keep the network together, the net together of that community in Florida, is for them to pray and to follow, to take my yoke upon you and learn from you, as Jesus said in Matthew 11:29. Let him teach us so that we can. There is something going on here. There is something going on in our youth, and it's not, they're already talking about video games. No. There's something deeper going on here. And it's not just availability to guns. It's multifaceted. There's multiple pieces to it. And what piece can we do? And I think the Lord will call the people to be on the front lines. He'll call the people to have the discussion about gun control, video games, administrative response, parental, community, all those pieces.
Family,
yes. He will. Every piece will be handled, and nothing beyond our abilities. And what does he say? He doesn't call the qualified. He qualifies the called. So for us as moms to be open, and that's the work of God's heart and hands, is to remind moms, our job is influential in society. And if you allow yourself, Lord, use me, he will. He will, and you'll be surprised how and where and how it'll come up in the grocery store, out on the curb, on the side of the soccer field, all those ways we're going to be called to. And really, going back to the beginning when you said prayer is all we've got, all we can do right now is to look to be the instrument, the Lord's instrument. You know what's going on. You know the words that will soothe. Use me. You know, talking from the clouds won't have the same effect, but you can speak through me. Come, give me the wisdom for what this person needs, this bumper sticker they need to hear, the guidance to refer them to something else, and help me be courageous to speak openly about my relationship with you. Because that's a scary part, too, is that we've talked about is sometimes they roll their eyes at us. But for us to stand there and say, no, the Lord's getting me through all of this. He is there. And he didn't want this to happen, but we're turning it over to him, and he's not going to let it go, and he's not going to let us go.
He will comfort us.
He will. He will.
Jane, thanks so much, as
Thank
always.
Thank you.
Appreciate your time. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. You can drop by and shop at their thrift store, 2275 Watt Avenue. It's open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, furniture, appliances, clothing, books, and everyday household items. You can give them a call, 916-972-1212. We'd also like to thank the kind and dedicated folks at Associated Sound for all their help in keeping all our equipment running with their excellent sound assistant and technical expertise. When it comes to sound, Associated Sound is the only name you need to know. Give them a call. They're at 916-649-8040 or go online at associatedsound.com. Well, located in Citrus Heights, Christ the King has served Northern California in the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years. Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King as the jewel of the diocese, a wonderful retreat center. They have parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. You can give them a call, 916-725-4720. That's 916-725-4720. Or visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights.
Hi, I'm John McGinnis, retired sheriff of Sacramento County, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thank you, Sheriff. Appreciate that. And welcome back, everyone. And we're pleased and honored to welcome in Steve Angrisano, who is at St. Clair's today, tomorrow, and Wednesday for a three-day parish mission, St. Clair in Roseville. Steve, good day to you.
Hello. How are you, Bob?
Very, very good, Steve. Good to have you on the air with us. Tell us, first off, tell us about the parish mission.
Well, just excited to be here. And St. Clair in Roseville is where I'll be, 6:30 in the evenings and 9:15 in the mornings, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday for the mission. And maybe some folks have never been to a parish mission or don't know what it is even, but it really is a retreat and an opportunity, I think. You know, we live in a world that's just so crazy in more ways than one, as I'm sure we'll talk about today. But life gets I'll tell it in parable fashion. I had a man come up to me during the mission I did last week in Detroit, and he said, "Well, I really needed this, just to stop and let God be a part of my life every day. I needed to remember these things. So thank you. This was a great experience." And I said to him, "Well, you know, it was only good because you allowed the opportunity for God to be part of your life here." And he said, "Well, it's nice of you to put it like it was my choice, but I didn't want to come here. My wife made me come here, but I'm glad that I did come here." And that happens a lot too. So it's an hour and 15 minutes, and it's life-giving, and I encourage anyone listening to come out. I enjoy being a part of it as much as I enjoy facilitating it. So it'll be a great time.
Tell us about your background, Steve. How did you get into doing this sort of thing?
I was always very involved as a young person in the church, and I'm a musician, so I didn't mention that, but I published with Oregon Catholic Press, and mm-hmm. I've written songs that might be, depending on what books you have, in a few at your church. But music was my entry into my own faith, and it allowed me, I started playing for Mass and confirmation retreats even as a teenager, and that sort of drew me in because it gave me a place to express myself as well. And after I finished college, I got a job as a youth minister at a parish. And so the very beginnings of my ministry, which is about 25 or 30 years ago now, I can't believe it, but was all youth ministry and youth conferences and rallies. I was involved in my own diocese, and it kind of just was a very grassroots thing. I got asked to—I live in Texas, so I got asked to come up to Oklahoma City and give a talk or over to Fort Worth, something mm-hmm. like that, and as time went on, kind of the big year for me was 1993, make sure I said that right. yeah, about 25 years ago. And I was asked to sing in Mile High Stadium when Pope John Paul came to the United
wow.
States for World Youth Day. And I was on the stage with the Holy Father, and that was just extraordinary. And that same year, we have a big National Catholic Youth Conference, and I wrote a song that was selected as the theme song for that. And those two events within months of each other were kind of a launching pad for mm-hmm. me in doing music and ministry more nationally.
I hear more and more people talk about, being rejuvenated in their faith or even coming to the faith from World Youth Day in Denver.
Yep. It was a landmark moment in the American church. And to have been there was... You knew it when it was happening. Well, that's the crazy thing. You could feel it when it was happening. And it's very difficult to explain if you've never been to a World Youth Day, and most people probably haven't, right? And so but we're talking hundreds of thousands of people, and the faith of it, the passion of it, the encounter, particularly in those days with Pope John Paul, who was just such a, I don't know, I think Pope Francis and Pope John Paul share a lot of that quality where you really, even from a long distance, you experience them so much in person as a mm-hmm. vehicle of God's grace. And not just, I'm not saying that Pope Benedict wasn't that, but I think what's interesting is Pope Benedict, his writing is so powerful that I actually think generations 100 years from now will remember him more than Pope John Paul and Pope Francis because he wrote it down in such a powerful way. But Pope John Paul and Pope Francis, they're just in person. You really experience how they've allowed God to be so important in their life, and you feel that.
Yeah, indeed, indeed. So the give us the times of the parish mission.
Sure. The mission is going to happen. I'll be at all the masses there this weekend if you want to get a little preview and sharing a little bit and singing a little bit. And then the mission will be every day, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, at 9:15 a.m. after the morning mass and at 6:30 p.m.
Very good. Very good. Steve, I know that you had a role after the Columbine killings, which
yes.
really, I don't know that it was the first. There've been many, but it was maybe the first that from a national standpoint, perhaps because that was about the time when all the cable news networks were up and running, and it was just
yep.
nonstop, and it was more than one person, which really, really, really stunned all of us. And now, of course, we have the terrible killings in Parkland in Florida at the
yeah.
high school there with 17 people, I think 14 students and two or three adults and employees of the school, coaches and counselors and security guards and things. How explain your role in Columbine and how, you know, as a faith community, and we were having this discussion earlier in the show today about, you know, and I've said, you know, everybody has their sort of opinions, some of them deeply held about gun control and all these kinds of things, which I think is a debate for another day. But we hear, and I've heard this so many times, it distresses me. Some people are saying our thoughts and prayers go with the people, and other people say, save your thoughts and prayers. I don't want to hear that.
Right.
You know, and
right.
and boy, I don't ever want to give away. And thoughts, you know, we use that term, and I use it in a prayerful way. You know, our good thoughts, our good wishes, our heart. But we never want to give up on prayer.
No. And the first question you asked, I was already traveling full time, doing things very similar to what I'll be doing in Roseville this week when the shooting happened at Columbine. However, I had taken a part-time job at my parish to do music on Sunday evenings, so it was a little tricky, but I do my best to get back on Sunday nights, and there was a couple of music groups that I was helping to direct.
And was that in Colorado at the time?
That was at St. Francis Cabrini in Littleton, Colorado.
Oh, wow.
Just a couple miles from the
right there.
School. So four of the young people from our parish did die in the shooting at Columbine. And I played for two funerals, which was actually three students because two of them had their funeral together with the bishop. So I played the music for the funerals of three of the young people who died in the shooting. And everything you describe and everything you're seeing on TV. And it always brings back a little bit. It is unique. I mean, Columbine is unique in a couple of interesting ways. What you said, it was two people, so it gave rise to so many questions, like how did they talk about this and plan this and nobody know? At
mm-hmm.
least you kind of wrap your brain around one disturbed person, but for there to be pieces of paper and practice and making
yeah.
bombs, you know, that'll always be a hard thing for, I think, some of us who were there in Littleton that, you know, how did this manage to go under the radar of everyone? I think this shooting, you know, what's going to be the difficult thing is to figure out how it managed to happen, even though it wasn't under the radar. And that's not really my expertise to talk about. But it seems like they knew this young man was a danger and
mm-hmm.
they knew that there was trouble and it still happened anyway. I think the important question that you're asking, though, and I did a webinar for Catholic school principals the day after the shooting, and I had just been there in Florida not too long ago for a religious educators conference. So
mm-hmm.
you know, some of the folks in the diocese there had heard me speak a little bit about Columbine, and there, you know, I can't give you the whole webinar on the radio, but I will say we did talk about this point. You know, what do you say when what people are really saying when they're saying keep your thoughts in prayers? Well, one thing, they're expressing frustration,
sure,
which is just natural, right? I mean, they're frustrated, but there is an implication there that I think it's important for us to be able to answer and articulate that, you know, your prayers don't mean anything. That's basically what they're saying.
Anything. Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, the first thing to remember is when people are really in crisis, your son has been shot, your family is deeply affected. It's really, as you said, most of this is discussion for another day. You know, it's not really time to talk about much of anything, but just to have a Kleenex and a bottle of water and to hug someone and show them love. But when kids do ask me, you know, how could God let this happen? And,
yeah,
you know, I always say, you know, in a very weird way, and it's a painful answer, but in a very weird way, days like this to me are evidence of God. And I say that because you and I are not like anything else in the universe. You and I, unique among every living organism, we reason. We have the ability to look outside and decide whether to wear a coat or bring an umbrella. We do not communicate or create just for food or shelter, but we have imaginative capacity to make music and dance and art, to create and destroy, to imagine. And this is my opinion. I don't quote scripture very often to people who don't believe in God, but the one scripture I quote is that it says in Genesis that unlike anything else in the universe, you and I are made in the image and likeness of God.
Amen.
We create because we're made in the image of the Creator, and we have a creative power and a destructive power, and it comes with responsibility, and it can be abused. And unfortunately, you know, that's what you see on days like this.
And I have to believe that it was put in our heart, the difference between right and wrong. We can get way off the rails, but we have that capacity innately to recognize the difference between right and wrong.
Yes. Yeah, I know that that's true. And it's very fascinating. If you ever want to do any reading, just find a basic natural law, you know, a little primer, something on that. But you know, most of the basic conclusions that we come to as Christians when it comes to how to live amongst each other, you know, Plato and Socrates came to those conclusions before Christianity.
Yeah,
I do think it's written in our hearts, you know.
Yeah, it's... Were you able to speak with Archbishop Winsky?
No, I was not.
Yeah, he came out with some very powerful statements as well. The Archbishop of Miami and
Miami, yeah.
You know, certainly, you know, the question, the Sister Bernadette Mary Reese wrote, how could it happen here? Parkland had just been named Florida's safest city in some kind of a poll, and you know, and it obviously it has nothing to do with safety, because one person can disrupt all that. Archbishop Winsky said he offers my prayers and those of the entire Catholic community for those affected by this senseless tragedy. Then asked that even as we are still learning about the appalling dimensions of this tragedy, we must come together as a community to support one another in this time of grief. Cardinal Daniel DiNardo, who is the president of U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, said that he encourages Catholics and Christians just beginning Lent to unite our prayers and sacrifices for the healing and consolation of all those who have been affected by violence in these last weeks, and for a conversion of heart, that our communities and nation will be marked by peace. And the Pope Francis, through Cardinal Pietro Parolin, the Vatican Secretary of State, said Pope Francis was deeply saddened to learn of the tragic shooting that took place at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland. The Pope promises his prayers to all those affected by this devastating attack and expresses the hope that such senseless acts of violence may cease. And Bishop Wenske added that at this particular time, we are trying to console family members and help with the preparation for these funerals. We are praying for the victims, the families, the survivors, praying for the entire community, because this is a trauma that affects all of us and especially affects parents that drop off their kids at the school door every day, never expecting that harm would come their way. To break the cycle of school violence, Archbishop Wenske said that it is not only the ready availability of guns and other weapons, but also our care of people with mental health issues that needs to be considered. So those are the words from the Catholic. You know, and the one thing, Steve, that the one picture that seemed to be on the front page of every newspaper in America was a picture of a woman, and they didn't really identify these people. She might have been a mom, might have been maybe a teacher, was consoling somebody, and she had ashes on her forehead.
Yes,
and
I saw that.
The juxtaposition of those two things, this terrible tragedy, and this woman of faith clearly there, and that whole question, as you so aptly put it, you know, where was God in this? Why did God let this happen? The questions that everybody asks.
It's, you know, that's, I think that some of the, what you just read, I mean, that's so articulately stated, and the reality is love is the answer, and that's a biblical response. You know, love is the answer, and we are going to have to address policy issues and some fundamental things in that way, but really, you know, not to make an odd analogy here, but in Europe, you know, and here in New York City for New Year's Day, and you saw so much preparation because there seems to be, I don't know why things like this seem to catch attention and trend amongst people, but, you know, so now we have to be careful that someone doesn't drive their car up on the sidewalk and kill 100 people at a parade or something like this. And so I'm not, you know, really, I'm not taking a side or diminishing any conversation on gun control. I'm stating what the Pope and the Bishop also said, which is that's still always going to be the secondary issue, because a person bent on destruction will find some way to destroy. And the way that you affect real change is that we're able to love and minister to and help those people before they reach that point.
Yeah, you have to take, I mean, the very first thing, even though you can certainly deal with weapons that are so destructive, the very first thing is you have to take away that intent to kill.
Right, right.
I mean, it wouldn't, if nobody had the intent to kill, it wouldn't matter how many weapons were out there. And if they do, if they do have the intent to kill, they're going to find a weapon, you know.
Right.
And
right.
Obviously some weapons are going to be more destructive than others, but you're still going to have an act of some kind. Steve, we hear this term survivor's guilt. That's a real thing, isn't it?
Oh, most definitely. Yeah, absolutely. And I think in the aftermath in Littleton, unfortunately, and this is a statistic that doesn't make the news, but unfortunately we also had a rise in suicide attempts after the shooting, and that was for a lot of reasons, and not to paint a super bleak picture, you know, but it was just an indicator that there's a lot of emotion and a lot of struggling that goes on with those who survive. And I heard a really amazingly articulate statement from a survivor of a tragedy, not the Littleton shooting, a different one. She was a speaker, and I don't know if I have all the facts right about her experience, so I won't try to identify it, but her really deep comment was just that for a long time she just wished she had died. It's like, I saw my friends die. I'm no more deserving than them, and I wished I had died. And she said, one day, you know, I was praying, and it's just as if God said to me, you know, it was your friend's journey to come home. It is not your journey yet to do that. You have other things still to do. And it was so powerful to hear her say that. She's like, some days I think that's the preferable journey, but that wasn't my journey. My journey is to stay here. And I just found that very powerful. And it is no easy answers to those things.
So. No, there aren't. They're questions that have plagued mankind for a long time. My dad fought in World War II and was a major, so he had some people under him, and many of them were killed, not through any negligence or anything, just they were in a battle and they got surrounded and they got trapped, and he was one of the few survivors. And I wasn't alive at the time. I was born shortly after World War II, but his brothers, his sister, all told us that he was a completely different man for the rest of his life, and he carried this survivor's guilt. And what could I have done differently, if anything? Why was I spared and so many of the people under me or my comrades were killed, you know? And it wasn't even that he felt he had done anything wrong. It was just,
right.
And it wasn't, it was in war, which a war which most everybody in the world felt was a just war, you know, even though he didn't like the idea of war and he never considered himself a warrior or a hero, or he just wanted to be home with mom and the two babies they had at that point, he still felt like he was fighting a war that needed to be fought, and yet he carried this guilt until the day he died. And never once to any of us kids in the, he lived for another 40 years after the war, never once did he talk about any of it. None.
Right.
None.
Right. Yep. Boy, and isn't that, not an uncommon story,
mm-hmm.
you know, and my, I couldn't even share what you just shared. I know that when my grandfather was literally on his deathbed and passing away, you know, he found a Medal of Valor in his drawer.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that's one of the highest awards a person can receive, but he never said a word about it. And when my mom said, "What is this?" And his answer was, "That was a bad day." That was his answer.
Wow.
And you think, I know.
Yeah, literally about 2 weeks ago, my mom died a few years ago, and a lot of papers and a lot of stuff, letters from dad to her from the war, you know, which are just so moving. And I didn't have a chance to process all of it. It's sitting in my closet. And one day, one of the bags that it was holding, all this, somehow it fell over and out onto the floor. I came home from work, and here were five or six papers on the floor in the bedroom and fallen out of the closet. And I picked up one, and it was my dad's discharge papers from the war, you know, in 1944 or 5, something like that. And just a lot of just standard kind of stuff. And then it said awards. And same thing. Bronze Star for Valor in Battle.
Right,
and I'm going, my dad got a Bronze Star and never told. I just found this out a couple of weeks ago.
Oh my God.
He died 30 years ago. And I'm like, how do we not know this?
Yeah.
You know, different generation.
Different generation. And part of that is the humility that I wish we still had.
Yeah.
And part of that, though, is what you speak of, you know, kind of that survivor's guilt in the sense that, you know, my friend died and I got a medal.
I got a medal.
I don't really feel like bragging about it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, yeah. Well, those are all, I mean, I really do think your very original question, even though we've gone around quite a few circles, you know, but your very original question, I think it's so important that we pray and that we recognize that prayer is not the least we can do. It is one of the most, you know, one of the most important things to do.
Yes, absolutely.
And we believe in a God who is not just watching us from a distance, but who interacts with our world and who loves us and who came upon this earth to show us the way. And I really think the only answer to these things, read Acts of the Apostles. You know, that's homework if anyone's, you know, listening. Read the story of the adversity of the first Christians and what was their response. Their response was to love first, regardless. If we're being burned as a Roman candle, which is graphic but true, you know, love first, keep loving. That is the only response.
Yeah, and imagine if they had a different response, our faith wouldn't have survived.
Right.
It wouldn't have survived. To think that 12 or however many, you know, you want to say of the very, very, very early people and those that around them that they spread the good news to, that this could survive and thrive 2,000 years later is mind-boggling, almost on the realm of impossibility.
Yes.
Unless it was true.
Right. Unless it was true.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine them having the courage to do what they did unless they knew it was true.
Yeah. You know, that's very well put. Why would they do this if they did not know it was true?
Right. Yeah. I mean, they saw a resurrected Christ with their own eyes, and they were not going to deny it. I mean, how can you deny it? If they hadn't, it would have just been easier to say, never mind, I'd rather hug my children for another 10 years. You know, it would have just been easier. You know, they weren't getting anything out of it. So,
let's go back. Let's just go fishing.
Yeah, right.
Steve, it's an honor and a pleasure to talk with you. Thanks for taking the time to come out here to the Diocese of Sacramento, to Roseville specifically, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of this week. And I know it's going to be a wonderful parish mission. Thanks for all your insights, too. Greatly appreciated.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me. Lots of story, lots of song. I know people will enjoy, so I hope to see you guys there.
Very good. God bless. That's Steve Angrisano, who will be St. Clair's tonight, and then tomorrow after the morning Mass, and in the evening at 6:30, and again on Wednesday in the morning after morning Mass, and again at 6:30 in the evening. The Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the good folks at the Catholic Store, located at 1928 Broadway in downtown Sacramento. It has articles for baptism, First Communion, confirmation, ordinations, weddings, and much, much more, plus Bibles, books, holy cards, and a variety of gifts. Give them a call, 916-457-1970, or visit them at 1928 Broadway right here in Sacramento. We're also brought to you by a generous grant from the Knights of Columbus Todd Cabral Agency, which provides guaranteed wealth creation for your family and your passion while maintaining the highest ethical standards in the industry. The Knights of Columbus Insurance, keeping Father McGivney's promise alive by providing peace of mind to Catholic families since 1882. To find an agent in your area, call our good friend Todd Cabral. Todd is at 916-997-9999. Bishop Sauer is also pleased to have underwriting support from Catherine Fisher, LCSW, providing therapy and mental health services from a Catholic perspective. Catherine knows that our Catholic faith is interwoven into every aspect of our lives and relationships. She offers counseling for individuals, couples, and families. You can call her at 916-214-4623 or go to C. Fisher, LCSW, at CATHIMail.com. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love, and you can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation by calling 916-851-2700. Fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Mercy ministry or ministries that you choose. And what a wonderful treasure Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts is for all of us. Not only does Easter's provide a wide array of Catholic books, both current releases and longtime classics, but they also sponsor a number of valuable workshops and lectures throughout the year. Give them a call. They're at 916-338-7272 or drop on and visit them, 6916-6916 Sunrise Boulevard in Citrus Heights. Well, if you have questions about retirement, Crumley & Associates can help with their confident retirement approach that can help define a clear roadmap to where you want to go. Details are available at Crumley & Associates. They're at 7956 California Avenue in Fair Oaks, or give them a call at 916-638-4600. We thank them for their longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour. Underwriting is also provided to the Bishop's Hour by Catholic Funeral and Cemetery Services, a ministry of the Diocese of Sacramento. As a church-owned nonprofit founded in faith, Catholic Funeral and Cemetery Services is dedicated to providing education, support, and resources during life's most difficult moments. They will make every effort to enable you to realize your final wishes while empowering families to make completely informed decisions. You can give them a call, 855-525-2285. We thank all the wonderful underwriters for the Bishop's Hour, and we hope you will support those who support us. Thanks for listening, everybody. God bless. We'll talk to you again soon.
To the cross I look, and to the cross I cling. Of its suffering I do drink, of its work I do sing. On it, my Savior.